Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is John Kwan, 14 years of combination experience, former tillerman, now driver on Ladder 1 for Tacoma Fire Department in Washington. John got his start a little later on in life with the fire service, but it was always something he thought of doing. His wife pushed him to fulfill his dream, and he did just that. The road wasn't easy upon entering, but John stayed true to himself and sought out mentors and attended conferences that would propel him to the firefighter he is today. Sometimes in life, especially when it comes to your career in the fire service, we must take ownership. With that, I present Mr. John Kwan.
Yeah, this is John Kwan. So, Danny, I got into the fire service back in 2001, and I didn't have any family in the fire service, didn't really have any connections to it. But at my high school, my senior year, I met with a counselor, and she's like, "What are you interested in?" And I'm like, "I don't know, like, I play sports, but I can't keep doing that forever." And she was like, "Well, we have this program where you can learn about different careers. And one of those was a fire service program." And so I thought that sounded interesting. So I did that. And then I get out of high school and I start volunteering in my hometown. And I just loved it immediately. I would spend as much time at the fire station as I could. And at that time, it was kind of cool. Cal Fire only had two-person staffing on their engines. So if you were a volunteer, you got to be the third, which was pretty cool.
Okay.
And so I'm doing that. And then I do a season with the Forest Service. Then I get my EMT and I go through a community college fire academy. And then I end up getting a spot as a reserve firefighter. And you got paid to work a couple shifts a month and go to training. And everybody's telling me like, "Hey man, if you want to get hired on the career side, you got to go to paramedic school." Right. And I'm working on the ambulance, as an EMT. And, so I go to paramedic school, but I'm 22 years old or something like that. And I was not ready, man. I got my ass handed to me. And that was, it was pretty gnarly because it was like the first time you like really fail at something in life. And, you know, you're letting down all your mentors. And it felt pretty crummy. And so then I just kind of like, you know, retreated into myself. And my brother is a musician and his band had signed a record deal. And he was like, "Hey man, like, why don't you just get out of town? Come be our tour manager." And I was like, "All right." So I got to travel all over the country, go to Europe a couple times, and ended up landing in Seattle and worked a bunch of different jobs, worked in bars, worked in a bottling plant, worked as a bike messenger for a long time, which if people don't know, in Seattle, they actually used to pay people to deliver stuff from place to place by bicycle, almost exclusively in the rain. And I meet my wife and, you know, we get married and she's just kind of like, "Dude, what are you going to do with your life? Like, you cannot keep riding your bicycle forever." And, you know, it had really like, it always like, you know, was a sense of shame that I never made the fire service thing happen. Like, picture me like pedaling on the streets of Seattle and I see a fire engine go by and it's just like a little dagger in my heart every time. And so I told my wife, I was like, you know, I really would be interested in trying to pursue a career as a firefighter. And she was like, "Oh, I had no idea you were interested in that." And I was like, "Yeah, absolutely." And she was like, "You should go for it." And, you know, I really do credit her so much with kind of like forcing me to grow up and then kind of like face my fear of pursuing that goal again. So went back through EMT school again because all my stuff had lapsed, started volunteering again, started testing all up and down the West Coast. And then just so fortunate to get picked up with Tacoma Fire back in 2014 now.
Okay.
So it really was a dream come true, man. Cause I guess one other little piece of that is I was in a pretty bad accident on my bicycle. I got hit by a car. It was a hit and run and I couldn't get up off the ground. It's the first time I ever felt something like that. And basically I had a fracture of one of my vertebrae. And I remember a Seattle fire engine pulled up, and I'm just laying there on the sidewalk, and they're like, "Hey, buddy, are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm good. Like, I got somebody coming to pick me up, but I appreciate it." But it was like that moment really kind of like reignited that spark in me, and it was like a real low, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, it really has been a dream come true, and I think part of why I'm so passionate about the job now and so into it has to do with me kind of having to go on that journey. You know what I mean? Like if I had been handed a job at 22, I probably would have been a slug. You know what I mean? I wouldn't have known what I had. I wouldn't have appreciated it without going through all those other struggles and getting that life experience. So even though, you know, I would love to say, you know, I've been a career firefighter since I was 22, I really am grateful that things worked out the way they did, because I think, you know, that was how it was supposed to be.
No, I'm a firm believer that everybody has a script written for them. You know what I mean? And some people are fortunate where, you know, they can get in the fire service at a very young age. And then some of them, like your story, you thought about it, but it didn't happen until later on in life. But I think that there's pluses and minuses to everything. But I truly believe, like I said, everything happens for a reason. Your script was written the way it was, and at the end of the day, you pretty much like have a sense of fulfillment, and you knew what it took to get to where you're at now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely don't take the job for granted, and I'm just appreciative for every day I get to do it.
For those that don't know, including myself, because you are probably, I don't know, maybe the second or third West Coaster that I've been able to interview.
Hey, how about that?
Can you tell us a little bit about Tacoma, the size, how many stations, personnel, things like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tacoma is an old fire department. It went professional back in 1889. And Tacoma's an interesting city in that it's a port city. It's very, very old, but also there's a lot of new construction as well. We cover 72 square miles. We have 44 miles of shoreline, so we're right on the Puget Sound. And 26 square miles of salt water we cover. We have 17 firehouses, 16 engine companies, 4 ladder companies, 5 medic companies. We run 3 battalions, and we have 4 24-hour BLS aid cars that do BLS transport. We ran 51,000 calls in 2023, 281 working structure fires. And then we kind of contract two smaller cities that butt right up next to us. And so that kind of gives us a total during the day of 240,000 residents. And then we have 46, 467 line personnel.
Okay. All right. And what's your minimum staffing across your apparatuses?
Sure. Yeah, we run 3-person staffing on all our engines and trucks. Yeah.
Three.
We have a fourth assigned, but it's kind of a glorified rover position. You know, if we were fat, we would get to keep them, but that almost never happens anymore. And I don't know, maybe some of the folks that have been on social media, I don't know if you've seen it, but our city's going through some pretty tough financial times. But you know, we're just going to keep doing what we do, right? It's a great place to work. I love the people there. It's big enough that everybody can kind of find their niche, but it's small enough to where we still all know each other for the most part, and it feels like a family. And I love, you know, fire service tradition, and you know, I'm proud to be a part of a fire department that's been around for a while.
Understood. If a first due structural box comes in Tacoma City limits, well, what's your first alarm assignment consist of?
Sure. So for Structure fire, you'll get four engine companies, you'll get two ladder companies, you'll get a medic unit, you'll get two BCs, and then one safety lieutenant. And I can't remember if I said it, two medic units. I'm sorry, Dan. I didn't get a lot of sleep last night at work. I'm a little punchy, but we're waking, we're getting caffeinated. We're gonna get there.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. And you mentioned three across the board, which to me definitely shows that when you get there, everybody's going to work.
Absolutely.
Even if you're an officer, it's not like all you're doing is pointing and giving directions. You're going to work too.
Yes, sir. Yeah, and I really do not envy the position of an engine company officer in our department because, you know, you're doing all those officer things, but at the same time, you're the heel on the hose line. You know what I mean? So that is a tough job. Those guys and girls have a lot on their plate for
Yeah,
sure.
I can imagine. But as far as like your station placement, are companies kind of right on top of each other? Is there a little good back and forth positive who's going to be first in and things like that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of that. And we, you know, we are fortunate in that you know, we get a lot of people on scene quickly. And then, you know, the majority of our residential fires are, you know, 1.5 story wood frame. So you know, and you know, there's definitely areas for improvement in our fire department, like there is for everybody, but we do get a lot of people inside the structure pretty quickly, which is a positive for sure.
Okay, awesome. With that being said, so you listen to your wife's advice, which I will say back when I was younger, you know, guys are gonna be guys. They think that we know it all, you know what I mean? And granted, there are some guys that do, but what I'm trying to pretty much get to is the fact that like with what your wife did. My wife did the same for me when it comes to getting outside the fire service walls. Hey, go to this conference that you want to go to. And without her forcing me to do that, I truly believe it wouldn't, this right here, this podcast thing wouldn't happen because of her. So like, I'm sure the way you feel about your wife is the same way I feel about mine. Like it took her to go like a little nudge, go, or else I
Absolutely.
wouldn't have done it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I can't say enough good things about her and you know, having that support and you know, a partner that pushes you to grow, right? That doesn't just kind of let you know, remain in stasis is really important. And you know, I think a lot of people say they want that, but sometimes, you know, it doesn't always feel good, you know, getting the truth. But
Yeah, no, you're right.
I'm grateful to have a, you know, a partner like that is willing to do that for me. So I give her all the credit in the world for supporting me in that endeavor, and then all the other things that I've pursued in the fire service as well.
Definitely, definitely. All right. With that being said, upon getting the job at Tacoma, did you have to go through some sort of academy? And when you did, what was it like? Was it surreal? Was it like, wow, like I'm here, I'm at this goal, but I got to get through this to get to the other side.
Absolutely. So we ran, I want to say it was a 14-week academy. And so we started out on the fire side of things. And then whether you're an EMT or not, you go through our EMT program.
Okay.
And so, absolutely. It was surreal. By that point, I'd been through the Community College Academy and I'd been through two volunteer academies. So I did, you know, have an idea of what to expect, but just the feeling of knowing that I was, you know, going to work and like actually I had an opportunity to, you know, realize my dream and I was getting paid for it. It was incredible. You know, I do really look back fondly on those academy days for sure. Like it was a special time, and I was blessed to have some really amazing classmates that have stayed close friends to this day.
Awesome. Awesome. So you complete it. What was your first assignment? And two-part question. What was your first assignment? And when you got there, did you try to go and find those firefighters you wanted to emulate?
Sure. At that time, when you went out on probation and in Tacoma, you would do ladder time and you would do engine time as
Okay.
well. So my first assignment was to ladder one, which this is going to sound crazy to a lot of people out there, but we actually used to let probies work as tillermen. So
Ooh.
I get there, and my first 3 days on the job were just spent tiller training for 8 hours a day. I rode as the fourth for those first three shifts, and then once I got signed off, tiller qualified, then I was it. And that was probably the most
Damn.
surreal thing, Danny, because I'm just like, I'm in the seat. I'm like, I'm supposed to be back here at night, like going to emergencies. It was crazy. It was, I mean, talk about a dream come true, right? I mean,
Right.
it's a pretty small percentage of folks that are lucky enough to get to do something like that in the fire service as it is, let alone as like a know nothing probie. I'm back there. But yeah, it was incredible. I will say, I did throughout the course of my probation, I definitely did have some people that I took note of, and I was like, oh, like I like how they operate, and some guys that became great friends and really kind of showed me, how, a more senior person should treat the new guy. They weren't necessarily on my shift, but they were in the firehouse, And two people, I'm just gonna say their names just because I love them so much, but Alex Menz and Bo Schemer were two guys that had gotten hired in the class before me, and there had been a 3 year hiring gap before my class. And those guys were both engine one guys and would go on to be ladder one guys. They really, poured into me, and I could just see their love for the craft. And just, I was just blown away by how much they knew and the way they operated. And I was just like, how can I ever catch up to these guys, right? Like, they're only 3 years ahead of me, but that may as well be a million years, is how it felt. So that was, it was pretty cool to have those experiences, and it definitely, meant a lot to me, and kind of formed and shaped, who I hope to be,
Right,
moving.
right.
Yeah.
And so with you coming in and being young, a novice in the service, what advice could you give to others? Because like I've heard of crazy stories of individuals that get hired that really want to learn the job and be good at it. And when they go to ask questions or can you show me this to whoever the case may be, they get shunned away or, it's like, I don't have time for you right now and things like that. So like, what advice could you give to someone that's coming in that wants to get good at the job pretty much?
Sure. I think, one thing that I would say is just, don't let whatever that first negative impression is stop you. Don't let that stop you in your tracks, 'cause even though I did have those guys that I mentioned, it wasn't right away, right? And they weren't people that I actually worked with consistently. So it took me a while to find that, right? And so I think if you do really want to be good at the job, like, you have to take ownership over that, right? Like, I think I had in my mind that I was gonna show up and some salty guy with a cool mustache was just gonna take me under his wing and be like, this is how it is, kid. And that did not happen at all. You know what I mean? I didn't have that experience, but what I did find, and we'll probably talk about this more later, is once I started going to outside training and meeting people from other departments, I really started to find some of those mentors that I was looking for, and meeting other like-minded people that inspired me to be better and step my game up. And so I would say, broaden your network once you can. Right. And you might find, the brotherhood that you were always hoping for it just may not be in your department or your station right away. It doesn't mean that that can't happen over time, but it just may not be there right now. And so the other piece of that is you kind of have to take ownership over this stuff, right? Like, I love to help out younger firefighters as much as I can, but I think we can kind of recognize the people that are engaged and are looking for that, right? And they're showing you, it's not just words, it's not just lip service. Like, you show them something and then they want to keep doing it, and they're asking more. So you kind of have to earn that in a way, and show people that you're worth it, right? By your own dedication, right? Nobody's gonna, hold your hand through this thing. And it probably would have been nice sometimes if there was somebody there to do that, but you really do have to make your own way and take ownership over your own craft. I would say that for sure.
Definitely love it. Love the advice. And you mentioned it, so let's definitely talk about it. Outside training. It was eye-opening for me that, at least in my experience, I'm not going to say I was bad at my job. Like, I knew certain skills and the way to do things. But then when I was shown you could do it this way, a much easier way, or just another way to keep in your head, and it's like, wow, like there's so much more better ways to do what I thought I knew. So, what's your
Sure.
take on outside training?
Yeah. I was pretty fortunate when I got done with probation. One of my first mentors, Alex, who I mentioned earlier, he kind of sat me down and he was like, "Hey, listen, man, like, I know this has been a really hard, trying year, and you've taken a lot of time away from your family." So he was like, "Take a month or two, reconnect, let those people know, how much you appreciate their sacrifices." But he said, as soon as you can, he's like, "You need to get out there and start going to outside classes." He's like, "Because that's how you're going to get better." And I was like, "Oh, okay." Like, I didn't even know that was a thing, right? Like, I was so, green. I didn't know that was a thing. So I start looking around, and I finished probation in March. And so the thing I stumble upon, which is just, it couldn't have been more fortuitous, right? Is I see that the Nozzle Forward is hosting a class down in Bend, Oregon, which is like 6 hours from where I live in Tacoma. And so I sign up for this class and it's in April. So it's like a month after I get off probation, right? And I just go by myself, right? And I'm sure Tacoma would love to pay for people to go to outside training, but we don't have the money, right? And so, no big deal. I pay my own way. Go down there, and what a watershed moment, right? To be exposed to Aaron Fields as a guy that just got off probation, right? And I mean, obviously, the skills themselves were very important to learn and hone. And in our academy, we actually they taught us a lot of the Nozzle Forward way, but to get it from the man himself. But more importantly for me, right, was just the passion with which he spoke about the job, and the kind of the ethos that he was putting forward just really resonated with me. And it was just like a mind-blowing moment, just like, oh my gosh, like there's this whole other world out here. And kind of to what you said about, I had a perception of my abilities, right? I thought I was somewhere, and then I get out there and I see, people that are operating at a far higher level. And I was just like, well, I can't have that. You know what I mean? Like, I need to get to that level now. And so going to that first class really just opened my eyes and energized me to this whole world, right? And so, from that point, forward, like, I was going to every class I could. And I think there's so many things with outside training, right? One, obviously, you're going to get exposed to new skills, right? Two, you're going to broaden your network. And I made friends in that Nozzle Forward class that are still close friends of mine to this day, right? And they live states away, but those connections you make with other people that are like-minded and that can inspire you and push you to keep stepping your game up. Like those things were just so huge for me. And then yeah, it's just like I said earlier, I didn't necessarily feel the brotherhood that I was looking for right away in Tacoma. And that has definitely developed over time, but finding kind of those kindred spirits out there in the broader fire service world was just so monumental for me. And I just loved it so much. And so many great things have happened to me just from going to classes, going to outside training, right? And I would caution younger people, we almost call it the nozzle forward effect, right? Where someone goes to this class, they have this moment on the mountain, right? And they're like, oh my God, like this is how it should be, like this is how we need to do things. And then they come back and it's just like fire and brimstone, like we're doing it wrong. And that is not the way, right? The way that you're going to make those changes over time is by starting with yourself, right? And take the pieces that you can utilize to improve your own skill set, right? And then when you start performing, people will start noticing, right? And then you slowly chip away at that and you build up your credibility, right? You build those relationships, and then you can slowly start to influence some of those changes that you want to see happen. But yeah, I guess the last thing on the outside training thing for me is one of the things that really like eats me up is when I hear people say something like, I'll start going to classes when the department starts paying for it. I caveat here, like I understand, that people have different financial burdens, absolutely, right? And it's not within everyone's means to be going to all these classes. But that being said, you have to take ownership over your own skills, right? And nobody gets to fucking tell me how good I'm gonna be at this job, right? That is mine. And if that means me sacrificing some other things so that I can pay my way to go to a class, then that's what I'm gonna do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I get 100%. I mean, there are so many, there are ones that I'd love to go to, but it's like I can't go to them all. I gotta balance making sure the boss is happy and financials and things like that. But there comes a point, like you said, when if you like the way I look at it, so some might view it differently, but some might agree with me. Like if you have, especially if you have a spouse and children and you're in this profession can make or break you. You could be gone in a second. So the way I look at it is if I can go and take a class that's not too far from here, like if I can drive to it and then I'll be back in a day or so, if that class allows me to be 1% better, that's 1% better that I hopefully can come home to my wife and child. You know what I mean? Like
Absolutely.
we're not at a job where we're pushing papers. We're
Right.
doing some dangerous shit. So it's like sacrifice. Okay. I don't, example, I really wanted to get some new wheels and tires for my truck. All
Sure.
right. Balance it. Like wheels and
Right.
tires, taking a class that could save my life. Like, you know what I mean? Like I always say like we have to be adults, but like you got to be an adult, like pick and choose.
Right.
But I get it, but I hate hearing that, or I hate hearing the fact that it's like, well, if they want me to go, they got to pay me for it. I get it. If it's a required in your job description, I think the department should pay for it. But at
Sure.
some point, if you like, let's say you want to get promoted, but the department's just, hey, we're out of money, the budget's kind of tight. Hey, if you really want that promotion, sometimes you got to eat it a little bit to get it. You know what I mean? And I
Yeah, I
get what you're
mean,
saying.
how many firemen do you know that have all kinds of hunting gear or have all kinds of golf clubs? Like firemen love expensive hobbies, right? But if you're counting on your fire department to get you where you need to be in terms of your skill set, then I have bad news for you. It's not going to happen.
Right. No, you're 100% right, man. 100% right. Like I firemen, at least firemen I know down here, love their guns. Like, oh my gosh. I'm like, what do you need this Rambo style looking thing with night scopes and all that? And listen here, guys. I'm sure you all know. Like, I'm a brown fella, all right? I don't know much about guns. Shockingly, I know. But like they love their guns. And I'm like, shit, like, y'all are
Yeah.
on something here.
Imagine if they knew as much about firefighting as they do about these guns.
Exactly. Love it. Love the message, man. As far as I want to switch gears to the topic of we're going with mentorship. I think we all, at least I know I can say I have a lot of mentors that I have met in my life and my career doing this, and they might not know that they're mentors to me, but they are. But I truly think and believe that finding one is very important for you in the fire service.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this is one of the things that I think is so great about the fire service. Is the mentorship that happens out there. And I will say, it's like so many things in life, right? It's not always what you think it's going to be. You know what I mean? It doesn't always look like that scenario I painted where, the old firefighter takes me under their wing and all of a sudden I
Right.
have a mentor,
Right.
right? Like we talked about, taking ownership for your skill set. We need to actively seek out mentors. Right, that they don't always just come to you, right? And that's earned, right? So people see you taking the initiative, people see you getting out there to classes, people see you training by yourself at the firehouse. People are going to take notice of those things and be like, you know what, this is someone that I should pour some time and attention into. And with me, a lot of my mentors were not from my own department initially. They were from other places, and that came from the outside training. And sometimes you don't even realize that mentorship is happening until you reflect back on the conversation later, and you're like, oh my gosh, like that person was really trying to share something with me right there, and I'm gonna take note of that. And not to sound negative, but we hear people complaining about this next generation of firefighters all the time, right? And I'm sure people have been complaining about the new generation as long as time, right? As long as there's been humans, right? But to me, like, how can you complain about the new firefighters? And I would say, what have you done to make them better? Like, what have you done to pass on the things that are important to you? That you think are right and good with our fire service, right? And I grew up in the suburbs of Southern California, and my dad was an architect. So I didn't grow up on a farm, and the fire service taught me how to start a chainsaw,
Right.
right?
Right.
And somebody took the time to teach me that, right? And they didn't shame me for not knowing how to do it, right? But they invested in me, and they took that time to show me something, right? And what are we going to do for these young people, right? And one of the things I think about a lot is just what will my legacy be, right? And for me, I hope that people will remember me as a good fireman, but that's not enough, right? That's not enough to me. I want people to remember me for the way that I treated other people, right? Because the firehouse can be the happiest place in the world, or it can be one of the loneliest places in the world.
Yes, sir.
So
Definitely.
any little bit of kindness that we can give a young person, any little bit, I want their experience to be better than mine was. You know what I mean? Like if I can help somebody get somewhere faster than I did, then that makes me feel good. Right, because it took me, a while, and I'm not where I'm not saying I'm at where I want to be now, but if I can fast forward someone and bring them up a little bit faster, like to me, that's what it's all about, right? That's what the fire service is all about, is passing on knowledge. It's about connecting with people. It's about pouring into other people. Like that to me is one of the best parts of the fire service.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Love it. Love it. The topic of culture. It's a big topic. I still think it's a big topic. You know, you see posts, you see videos, and I know even for me, like I'll see a post and it's like, I wish my firehouse had that type of culture in it. And it's definitely not something that can happen overnight. I do know from firsthand experience, when you try to bring in change to a place that has, I call it where like complacency has made a home, complacency has its own bunk in the station, it's going to be very hard to get people on board. You might get one, two if you're lucky, but a lot of times you're going against the grain and the norm. And it's like, I don't know where to begin. So, what has the culture been like for you?
Sure. And I think when we talk about culture, it's probably good to define what we mean, right? And that can be kind of daunting. But to me, at the most base level, like culture is how we do things, right? It's just how we do things. And so, to be honest, it wasn't what I hoped it would be when I got there, right? Nobody was doing any training that they didn't have to do, right? If training wasn't mandated, they weren't doing it, right? And then, different aspects like, we would eat dinner together, but that was pretty much it, right? And so I think, if the culture isn't what you want it to be, then, there's the easiest place to start is with yourself, right? And so you have to embody those things you want to see, right? And so for me, what that meant was training by myself, right? And there's a myth we like to tell in the fire service, and it goes something like this, that we have a young firefighter that doesn't have a crew that wants to train, right? And we tell them, you know what, man, just get out there in the bay, start opening things up, start making some noise, and before you know it, they'll start peeking out there, and the senior man will magically levitate out of his recliner, and before you know it, you got everybody out there and they're involved and they're dropping nuggets. And I'm like, I gotta tell you, sometimes they don't come out. You know what I mean? Like, I've spent a lot of time in a bay by myself. But over time, right? Like, big changes happen very, very slowly, right? And so, just in the last 3 years, I've seen, I was so proud of this at the Pacific Northwest Conference. We had 22 Tacoma firefighters there. And that was amazing to me, because when I started going to classes, it was me and there was one other person in the department that would go to classes, Shannon Gibson. And those were the only people you would ever, people were like, oh, wow, like a Tacoma person's here. Like, we never see you guys out there, right? We were very much unto our own in an island, right? And it's not going to happen by coming in and telling people how things should be. That is not going to work, right? We have to start with ourselves, right? We have to be those changes that we wish to see. And then if we really want to make changes, it comes down to building relationships, right? And relationship building can sound kind of sleazy and corporate and gross, right? But to me, what that means is that's just being kind to other people. That's just treating other people the way you'd like to be treated. That's sharing information with other people. That's bringing people in, right? And so over time, through your performance, through the way you treat other people, you're going to build up that credibility, right? And that's when the change will start to slowly happen, right? We had a couple cool things that I would take as markers of cultural success. right? I put a sticker up on the inside of our bay door. It's the expect fire, expect victim sticker, right? Which is almost, ubiquitous in the fire service now. But, on our crew, what that means to us is that any call with the words smoke or fire in it, we're getting all the way dressed out, right? Whether we've been to this building once or 1,000 times, we're treating it as if, right? And so we had a box alarm come in at this high rise next door to my firehouse, a place we've been to countless times, right? But on this day, there was smoke showing from the 13th floor, right? And so we upgraded it to a full alarm. And, because of, the mindset that the crew has had and the training, we were able to hike up to the 13th floor. It wasn't a big fire, right? But we pretty much knocked it down with the can, got a search done all before the 10-minute timer was up. And I was so proud of our people for accomplishing that, right? That doesn't just happen overnight, right? That's people being disciplined. That's people buying into the mission, right? And that, to me, that was kind of like, okay, like a lot of this stuff that we've been working on for a long time, it's starting to actually happen, right? Another thing that we did. I think I mentioned to you before we started, our positions are filled on a seniority bid, and so our previous officer had promoted out, so he went from lieutenant to captain. And at the time I was the tillerman, and my driver and I were looking to get a new officer. Right. And there's usually some sort of informal recruiting that goes on.
Right.
But we were like, we need to step this up. Right. And so my partner, she had the idea. My driver, she was like, what if we made a want ad? And I was like, ooh, I like that. So together we came up with a want ad for our perfect ladder one officer. Right. And I'll tell you, I was nervous to put it out there. I was like, oh man, we're gonna get torched for this. You know what I mean? Like, but sometimes, it's really helpful to identify the things that you want and the things that you don't want. And the crazy thing was, it actually worked. Like, we got the officer that we wanted, and what followed was probably like the three happiest and most fulfilling years of my career, right? And maybe we scared some people off that would have beat him on seniority because they saw, like things that we had in there, right?
Expectations, right.
Expectations. But, kind of the bigger point with that is, it wouldn't have worked if we weren't who we said we were. If we hadn't been putting in that work, right? If we hadn't been living up to those expectations that we hold ourselves to, right? If we hadn't been performing on fires, like otherwise it would have just been like a dumb Facebook thing, right? It would just be
Right.
words, right? But there was actions behind those words, and I think that's why it actually worked.
I love it. I'll say, I mean, since you were transparent, I always like to be transparent, but I like when the guests are honest that, and they speak the truth. I will say I've heard that a lot. I've said it a lot. I'm sure that whole, if you train by yourself, eventually they will come. I'm sure maybe some people have had experiences where after like a couple weeks or the first month, sure.
Sure.
But I can tell you in my experience, no. It's
Yeah. No.
either they stumble upon that you're out there doing it and then they might participate, or they're gonna go, or crap, or I'm gonna go right back inside. Maybe he didn't see me, which at that point, I don't care because the way I look at it, I'm not an officer at my department. I'm thinking about potentially being one. I'm still
Right.
not keen. There are some days where I'm like, yes, but then there are some days I'm like, I don't freaking know. So, I say that to say that, yeah, sometimes it sucks when you're out there and you're by yourself, or you're working out and you're by yourself, and you see, I mean, I'm a huge proponent of all these cadres and positive members groups on Facebook, shared suffering. Everybody does a hard workout together. That way, when shit hits the fan, hey, this person's got my back.
Yep.
Can I say that on the crew that I'm with? And I'm very transparent, so I'm sure if anyone from my department's listening, you can share the snippet and send it to whoever you'd like. But I don't know if that's the case. You know what I mean? Because we're not out there. There is no camaraderie per se. You know,
Right.
there'll be camaraderie on what I would deem like dumb stuff where,
Sure.
you know what I mean? But like, I think, at least for me, when I go to work, I am there for a specific task. I'm not saying for the whole 24-hour shift, I want to be at it for 24 hours. No. But what I'm
Sure.
saying is, when you come into work, at least be a fireman from 8 to 5. You know what
Right.
I mean? Like, after 5, go do what you got to do. Because I like, trust me, I have a plethora of shows that I like to watch and catch up on, and things I do on my computer. Like, it's my me time while I'm at work. But at
Sure.
least during the daylight hours, give a damn about doing the job. And
100%.
I have a, some people might say, and I get it, like, not everybody is going to have the same emotions and feel the way I do about the fire service. I get it. But you gotta give a little bit of a damn. You know what I mean? Like, it can't just be, oh, I'm here today. Whew, I'm not gonna do anything. It's a chill out day. I'm here from my real job. I'm relaxing. Like, that's bullshit to me. And at some point, you have to do what you have to do. So I am taking some matters into my own hands, and I'm going to explore some things. But I love the fact that you said it, because it's true. I'm not saying, like, and I'm sure you're also saying the same thing. I'm not saying that that doesn't happen, that your crew comes out there. But man, if we're honest with ourselves, it's very infrequent.
Yeah. And I mean, going back to, making those friendships through outside training, I will say, that's one of the positives of social media is, I can see, Keenan's getting a workout in today, right? Or Miles is getting a workout in it, whoever, right? And I'm like, oh man, they're getting it. Like, I got to get some too now, right?
Exactly.
And it's kind
Exactly.
of like this informal accountability,
Yep.
which is pretty cool,
Yep.
But yeah, I couldn't agree more with what you said. Like, put your fucking real estate business aside for 8 hours and let's be firemen when we're at work,
For
right?
real. Right. No, I mean, it's, you know, I was talking about a buddy of mine, and that's what he wrote. He's like, I would love for them to at least be a fireman from like 8 to 5. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, let's go out and let's pre-plan some buildings. Let's see how we can position our truck. Like, there's so many things we can do. And I'm not sure if it's because the individuals out there don't know, or they just don't want to do it, you know? But either way, it's like, if you hold a certain position in your organization, like, at this point, to me, you accepted it for the pay and the title. That's it. And that's all. Or you just didn't want to work for this individual, but now you're the individual, you're the officer that I vow never to be like.
Right.
You know?
And I mean, I think it is important to realize not everyone is going to share, the passion that we have for the job and be as into the job as we are. But rather than get wrapped around the wheel about it, like all we can do is work on ourselves and do our best to set the example. And then, the people that we'll attract with that, we'll just keep building,
Yep, exactly. And I'm gonna give a shout out here because I know he listens. So to Chief Hess, when you're listening, this is why sometimes when you walk into a building or a station, I am where I'm at, because at this point, I just worry about myself. So I'm going to do things by myself. I will be in a completely different space than the others. And I'm not saying it's right, because that's not what it's supposed to be like. But at some point, when you have nothing else left to give, that's what I resort to. I stay by myself, but I'm doing things that I'm supposed to do, even if I'm doing it alone.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's been many a time where, I've been feeling frustrated about something. And this is not, I'm really blessed with my crew now, but in the past, right? And I would just be like, I'm just gonna go down to the alley and punch myself in the face for an hour. You know what I mean? Get a workout in and burn off some of that negative energy and then come back.
Absolutely, man. Yes, sir.
You can feel good about yourself, you
Hell
did that.
yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, trust me, there are some days where, yeah, I've had a two a day because I need to let some steam out,
No doubt.
and that's what I do. So I'm glad that I can relate to you on that for sure.
Yes, sir.
While we're on that, let's talk about fitness. I mean, I see you're rocking the Indiana Smoke Diver Association. It's something I'm definitely thinking about. I couldn't tell you how many times I'm like laying in bed and I just think, all right, what would this journey be like? But again, time and a place. I got to make sure the wife is good, the daughter's good, the timing's right, because 6 days away, it's not like, hey, I'm going for like a 2 day conference, I'll be back. 6 days, that's a lot of time. So how did you discover this, and what made you say to yourself, like, hell, I'm going to try it?
Sure. I wish it was a more interesting way to tell you, but I saw it on Instagram, I'll be honest.
Okay. I mean, no, me too. That's how
Yeah.
I found out about it.
Yeah. And I think when I first got exposed to it, there wasn't nearly as much of a social media presence as there is now. But I was intrigued, right? And I was like, what is this? Like, and then I went on the website, and I think there's a blurb there that said something to the effect of, during the course of this 6 days, a candidate will accrue like 5 years of fire experience. And I was like, well, I want that. Like, who wouldn't want 5 extra years of experience under their belt, right? And so, I was kind of following along, and then, just like everybody, right? Doubts start to creep in, and like, what if I go and I fail, or, can I do it? All these things. And so for a period of time, I actually had, talked myself out of it, right? I'm like, you don't need to do it, right? You don't have anything to prove. You're training all the time, you're going to classes, you're teaching, you're doing all these things. But the itch wouldn't go away, right? And I was just like, always wondering, right? Always wondering. And anything that I do, how do I explain this? Like, I want to push it as far as I can, right? I want to be legit. You know what I mean? Like, I hate posers, and I don't want to be a poser, right? And so it's in my mind. And then one of the guys that I teach with at Brothers in Battle, Brian Olson, went through Georgia. And sometimes you just need to see someone that do something. And props to him for being the first one out of people that I actually knew to take the step, right? And so that kind of reignited that interest within me. And so then I was like, all right, like, I'm gonna do this, right? And I'm gonna go all in. And originally, my goal was to do it when I was 40. That was my plan. But that wasn't to be, right? I applied, wasn't getting in, was on a wait list, and then I get in off the wait list, and I'm slated to go in class 9. And one of my mentors that I mentioned before, Bo Schemer, a very, very dear friend of mine, probably the best, to me, he represented all the best things about the fire service, but he got sick with job-related cancer, and he passed away. And so, as it would be, his funeral fell on the first day of class. So I withdrew, and then they were gracious enough to give me a spot in class 10, which I'm eternally grateful for, because I wasn't ready. I thought I was ready, but I wasn't ready, and my mind wouldn't have been right. So I had another year to prepare, and I went all in on the preparation. And what I would say to anybody, right, is if there's even a small part of you that wants to go or that is interested in it, just do it. Even if you don't go, or even if you go and it doesn't work out, like, going through that preparation process is going to make you better. Like, I can definitively say, from the moment I began my preparation, until I went, like I was markedly better, right? I had developed more on the mental toughness side. The physical fitness obviously had improved because, I think when I first started seeing people doing gear workouts online, like I was intimidated by it,
Right.
and I have always taken my fitness seriously. When I made that decision to start pursuing the fire service again, like I was like, what is this CrossFit thing, right? And I'm like, maybe I should be doing that, because most of my fitness up until that point had been based around cycling, right? So it was very specific. And I was like, I'm pretty sure firefighting is pretty tough, so I should probably get some muscles and step up my game. So I had always been fit, but I had never worked out in gear. And going through that process obviously, forced me to kind of confront that fear and start doing it. And then once I started doing it, I saw so much value in it, right? And I noticed, my fire ground performance improving, right? And the amount of work that I could do, in a given amount of time was much greater than what I'd been able to do before, and my recovery was faster. And we all know, right? We all know that doing work in your gear is hard. Like, we all know that going to fires, if you're working, it's hard work, right? But we tell ourselves, you see people engage in this cognitive dissonance where they're like, they experience that hardship, right? And then they like trick themselves into thinking they don't need to make a change after that, right? And so they just continue down that same path. And so for me, it was a really good thing to go down that path. And I would really encourage anybody that has interest in it to pursue it. Did I answer all your questions about that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely, man. And I'm sure at the end of it, however Indiana does it, because I know Georgia has the nuts and bolts thing. I'm not sure if Indiana has something similar, but when you knew, hey, like you did it, here you go. I'm sure all that hard work, preparation, man, the feeling, it probably was indescribable for you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, Indiana is, affiliated with the Georgia Smoke Diver Program. And so the curriculum is the same. There might be some small flavor that's different, but we also do the nuts and bolts evolution. So yeah, it was an indescribable feeling. Like I can get jacked up right now just talking about it. Like, it was an incredible feeling, especially after kind of going through that journey of, I'm not gonna go, I am gonna go, I'm not gonna go. And then, all those early mornings and late nights, and it occupies so much space in your mind when you're getting ready for it. It's all you can think about. And so to go through that, it was an incredible experience. Like, I really, can't put words to it, but just the relationships you make with your classmates and with your smoke buddy, and then being on the other side of it now and getting to know, the instructors, and what it means to be a smoke driver going forward. To me, it's just another level of accountability, right? And it's like, anybody can go, do something hard for 6 days, but what does that mean for the rest of your career, right? How do you live up to that mantle and hold that standard? To me, is a pretty powerful thing.
Definitely. And, smoke diver aside, how important is, and I mean, I can't stress this enough, but I love having guests come on here and talk about it. Fitness and the fire service, it goes hand in hand. It's like fitness and fire, training and fire. Like it's an important role. So what's your take on the fitness portion?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a quote from Major Dick Winters from Banna Brothers that I really like, and it's something to the effect of, physical fitness is the root of mental toughness, right? And so, we can have all the knowledge in the world, right? Like you may know in your mind exactly how you're going to force a door and throw a ladder and take a window and perform a search, right? But if you don't have the fitness to actually do those things, then what good is it, right? And so to me, having a high level of fitness is absolutely fundamental to what we do, right? And we all know, I said it before, but we all know firefighting is hard, right? And so knowing that, to me, it just reeks of negligence to not take your fitness seriously, right? And I like to say, if you don't take your fitness seriously, I can't take your firefighting seriously, right? And
No, you're
you know what I
right.
mean? You know
Yeah.
what I mean? It's like you could go to all the conferences in the world, but if you haven't, and I'm not saying we all need to look like
Right, exactly. I've said it before. Yes.
we don't it's not about looks, right? It's about work capacity, right? And different people can be in different shapes and get the job done. But fitness is something that I take very, very seriously, right? And we've had recruits show up to our fire academy, and they obviously haven't taken their fitness seriously. And to me, that's a slap in the face. Like, how dare you disrespect the fire service like that by showing up unprepared? And then, beyond that, like as whether professional or volunteer, right? If you're wearing the uniform, don't disrespect the fire service by not taking your fitness seriously and showing up prepared. Right, because if you ask, Mrs. Smith at the grocery store what she thinks firefighters' fitness looks like, I guarantee they're like, oh man, those guys, it's incredible what they do, and they must just work out all the time, right? And it's sad that it's not true. It's very sad that it's not true. And the fire service's day of reckoning is coming. Like, we can only stand on the shoulders of giants for so long. But we will be held accountable, right? And I don't want to be found wanting.
Do that. I can't tell you how many I've said that. And some people will hear it and be like, man, you're just wishing for something bad to happen. Absolutely not. I will say when I'm on shift, I'd love for a good job to come in because that's what we are here for. We don't want to see people's stuff burn down. But in order to get good at the job, you got to go to the jobs. And I work for an organization, we don't see very many, like most of the majority of the fire service.
Everybody.
But it's the simple fact that you're willing to gamble. You're willing to just be like, when I'm at work, I want to do the bare minimum. If we got to go do mandatory quarterly training, we'll do it. Some will bitch about it, and then it's just like wash, rinse, and repeat, and we're doing the same thing. And it's like, well, I live and work in Anytown, USA, and it's like, okay,
Yeah.
that's like to me the fact that you can roll the dice like that is just it's amazing because. You may go your career and have skated by. I'm sure there is plenty that have come into this profession, done the bare minimum, and they happily made it out without a scratch, without a close call, and they retired. That's great. I'm not willing to roll that dice. I want to
No.
be prepared because we've all seen it by now for sure, the incident in Wakeman, Ohio, getting a lot of attention, and it should. It should. The police are being held to a standard. Fire department, same thing, man. And like you mentioned it earlier, whenever we have, which we haven't done it in a while, but like we'd have either like the Boy Scouts or whatever it's called now, they would come in and a lot of the kids' parents would be there. And so, hey, it's fire service question time. We show them the truck. But like I have seen the look on females and males. When a particular firefighter shows up in uniform and they're like, oh, like you could just see it. They're like, not really what I was envisioning. Chicago Fire, they see like the built
Sure.
tough, physique ready type fireman. Yeah, we don't all need to look like that, but we need to look better than that individual I'm describing. And we all know we have individuals like that. It's not a shame they got to that certain point, but that's not what the public like. When they call and they need services, We gotta be there. You can't be huffing and puffing. You're 30 minute cylinder. You kill it in like 9 minutes, and it's like, bro, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So.
I mean, we talk a lot about brotherhood in the fire service and sisterhood, and you're not my brother or my sister if you're not prepared, right? That's just, you're lying to me. You're lying to me. Those are just words. There has to be actions. And we talk a lot about how much we care about family. If you care about your family, be in shape so you can come home to them.
I'm telling you,
So you
man.
can
It's
live a long and happy life after the job's over too, right? But we may only get that career fire once. We may only get that one opportunity to make that grab, right? And what a shame it would be to have that opportunity and not be ready, right? That's the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night.
absolutely, man. Absolutely. It's mind-boggling. And then the worst part is, which I'll get off once I get off the soapbox, but the worst part is like when you hear that their children are in sports and they're really good, and you're like, well, hey, if you want to get good at this, you gotta practice, you gotta get, and it's like that kind of goes the same thing with the fire service. You're preaching to your child, you gotta do this, that, and the other if you want to be good, but yet you are quietly comfortable sitting in the recliners all day doing the bare minimum or sitting at the desk behind the computer, whatever. Like you know what I mean? Like how does that compute in your mind that, you're pretty much contradicting yourself? It's
Absolutely.
crazy. Crazy. As far as you hit imposter syndrome. Now I've heard of that, and I can say, when I had the notion of starting this podcast, I was like, okay, like how is this gonna go? What will others say? But actions and your name and your work ethic to me speaks louder than anything else. People are gonna have opinions about you, and that's fine. Some may say he's a fraud, he's not whatever. I know what I try to do every day that I'm on shift and when I'm not on shift. So with that being said, it is a real thing out there, for sure. So what's your take on that?
I'm not really sure the first time I heard that term, but when I did, and I looked into it, I was like, wow, this is me, right? And for folks that maybe aren't super familiar with it, it's essentially, the fear of being exposed as a fraud, despite, all the evidence to the contrary, right? And the reason I wanted to talk about it, Danny, is I've confided in mentors and people that I trust about having these feelings, right? And to my surprise, some of the people that I respect, the most in the fire service have had similar feelings, right? And they're like, oh yeah, absolutely, like I feel that way too, and I think, it's good to talk about it and realize, that you're not alone in feeling this way. I'm not sure when it started for me, but for a while there, it felt like, the more success I was having, it was kind of the worse it got for me. And, I don't know about you, but for me, like one of my number one nightmares is, being on a call and letting my crew down, right? And having it end in a negative result. And it's just hard to picture, anything worse than, somebody feeling that they can count on you and they can trust you, and then, you're exposed, right? You're exposed as a fraud. And maybe to some extent it did push me to train more and try and learn more and keep upping my game. But I think ultimately, it was a negative thing in that, you're getting these kind of intrusive thoughts of self-doubt, right? And you're just like, oh man, like I'm an idiot. Like, I'm not what people think I am, right? And I don't want to let them down. And so, what's helped me, the most is talking with other people about it, and that's kind of why I wanted to bring it up with you and to let people out there know. Like, I guarantee you, like, whoever, is your personal hero in the fire service, like they probably felt that way at some point too. And so, yeah, I think, talking about it, just kind of being honest with myself and actually like taking stock of, the things that I really am proud of that I've been able to accomplish in the fire service, and realizing like it wasn't just luck that made those things happen. Like, I do absolutely feel, I've been extremely blessed and fortunate in the fire service, and I feel in many ways like I've led a charmed fire service life, just in, some of the amazing things that have happened to me and that I've gotten to be a part of. But, ultimately, like, those things didn't happen by accident, right? And kind of, one of the big things that did really, really help me was going to Smoke Diver, right? And I was obviously nervous about that too, right? And like putting myself out there, toeing the line, and but to be able to say, you know what, I went to a place where there is very high standard that is upheld, right? And I may not have always exceeded the standard, but I met the standard, and I was there with some just incredible firemen, and I held my own with some of the people that I consider to be the best, and that really has given me a newfound confidence that I didn't always have, right? I went to some dark places, and I managed to scratch and claw my way out of them, and that it's been a very powerful thing for me moving forward.
And I didn't want you to think I was taking away, but when you were talking, it clued in my head. So that's why I always keep the pen in my hand. I take notes as people talk. But I think this goes perfectly with what we were talking about with imposter syndrome, because it keyed in my head. For 2024, you were named Firefighter of the Year, and it has Bo. How do I don't want to mess up his last name.
Bo Schemer.
Bo Schemer, it has his name on there, so I guess it's like the Bo Schemer Firefighter of the Year award,
Yes.
and it was given to you. So, and you mentioned he was one of your mentors for sure. So, I'm assuming that was probably voted on by your peers, somebody you may not know. They might keep it kind of confidential, but that's got to mean something to you, to for somebody in your organization to see what you're doing, and they're like, hey, we're putting in for this for him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge honor, and you can't help but feel that the other people are more qualified and more deserving. But all those people inspire me. The other nominees inspire me every day to be better. But yeah, it definitely was made far more meaningful and special to me because it had Bo's name on it. Someone that was a mentor was I would consider one of my best friends on the job, and someone who I just aspire to be like in so many ways, and he was so many things that I'm not. But I think if we're lucky, we all have a Bo in our life, just one of those once in a lifetime people that embody everything that's good and right in the fire service. Right. And somebody, not only, was he a great fireman, but more importantly, he was a great human being and an amazing husband and father and brother and friend, and someone that just inspired so many people, within my department to want to be better, to want to treat people better, to want to, love the job more. Right. And so, if there's any part of what I'm doing that emulates that, then I'm happy for it, and I'm very grateful to him, and I'm very grateful to get the award.
Awesome, man. Awesome. And the way I look at this award, along with many other awards, because there are so many Bo Schemers out there within the fire service, whether you're a volunteer career, it doesn't matter. And whenever you meet those individuals, and like I said, everyone has a script. And unfortunately, his script, the man upstairs was like, hey, this is how your script's written. It is what it is, like every. I don't want to say everybody, but some people go through life and they lose like loved ones. Like, so I say that to say because like I lost my mom at a decent early age for me. She wasn't able to see me get married physically. She wasn't able to meet my daughter physically, but I know she's up there watching. So I
Absolutely.
say that because the way he impacted you feel like you have a responsibility when you show up for work day in and day out. And to those, which, and when I mean those, we all know who those are because they don't listen to this podcast, but or any other podcast out there for any of that fact, or go to conferences or whatever the case may be. But for those individuals that come into work and it's like, all right, this is my time off, you are disrespecting the Bo Schemers out there throughout the United States, those that actually came into work ready to do the job, wanting to learn to get better. And I mean, I wish those individuals out there, I wish that they would all just go, hey, you know what? This job, I found another side gig that's not in the fire service. It pays a lot more. I can do a lot less. Please, by all means, I'd open the I'll help you pack. Like, let's go. But unfortunately, we don't have that. They don't always do that, and they are in organizations all over the country. But to me, that's what you do when you show up for work. When you take a promotional task, you actually get the position, and it's like, oh, I'm the boss now, so we're gonna coast. Like you're doing nothing but failing yourself and failing the ones that work with you. You're failing your family, and then you'll have the audacity, God forbid, if something happens, to be like sitting down in a room. Well, what happened? How did this happen? It happened because you let your foot off the gas. You stopped caring. You didn't give a damn. This is the end result. And I hate that we have them, but they're out there. And so my message to anyone listening, and yourself included, is just keep going, man. You know what I mean? Keep going. Don't let them phase you out. Do what you have to do, even if you're doing it alone. It is what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, totally agree.
Last topic of, I don't know if maybe if we hit that or not, with the work-life balance.
Mm.
I know I mentioned it a little bit because, like I said, I'd love to go to conferences. I man, there's so many, but I gotta make sure to me the main boss is happy. So what's your advice for any of those out there? Because in order to be good, you need to go to these conferences. You need to go to these outside training because you're getting experience that you're not getting within your own organization, which is why I go to conferences because I can only get so much of sets and reps within my own realm of where I work. So what's your take on that?
Yeah. Maybe not the best person to take advice from on the work-life balance of things, but I do feel like it is important to talk about, right? And
Right.
I think one of the biggest, lies that we tell in the fire service is that family comes first, because for people that are ate up with the job, that isn't always the case. And, I've failed at it miserably. You know what I mean? And we kind of talked about my journey of finding this outside training and the larger fire service community. And it was infectious, right? And you get that FOMO, right? Of like, oh, I want to be at this conference because all my friends are there. And then there's the other piece of it where like somebody else out there is getting better, and I'm not. Right. And so you feel like you're missing out on these things. But there has to be a balance. Right. And, I've been fortunate to teach with Brothers in Battle. And, that first year when I was part of the cadre, I don't know how many places I traveled to teach, just because, I was so excited about it. And I think what we do is really important. And, I wanted to honor the opportunity that I had been given. But, that was my daughter's, that was the first year of her life, you know, and I missed a lot of it. And, you know, I think if we look, I forget what the numbers are, but, you know, just working a standard firefighter schedule, you know, by the time my kid is 18, I'll probably have missed around 8 years of her life, you know, being gone at the firehouse. So if I stack more on top of that, right, that's more and more time away. And, you know, some friends of mine, Brian Olson and Steven Tyler, have talked about this before. Like, it really doesn't matter if, you know, you can go to a conference and everybody knows your name and you have a million buddies. Like, if your kids think you're an asshole, like, what's the point? The point, right? And, you know, I have a 5-year-old daughter who is just, you know, the light of my life, right? And I realize how fast she's been growing up.
I'm with you because I got one same age. And, but
So,
in her mind, she's 16 though. But go
yeah.
ahead.
Sorry, you glitched there for a second.
Oh, so I was saying that me and you, we have a daughter. I have a daughter that's also the same age, but in her mind, she's 16. So
Oh,
you can't tell her anything.
I can relate. I can relate, bro.
Yeah.
But you know, how fast did those first 5 years go
Yeah.
by?
Yeah, man.
And I mean, how rife is our fire service with divorce, right? And so if we truly do care about family, if we do, truly do want to put our family first, that has to be what it is, right? And like I said, I've failed miserably at this. And last year, I'm like, I'm not going to do that much. And then, you know, the next thing you know, Smoke Diver Alone was 8 days away from the family with travel and everything. And not to say that these things aren't important, but, you know, we have to find some sort of a balance. And, you know, so what that's looking like for me is, you know, next year, I'm going to do three things that take me away, and that's it. You know what I
Gotcha.
mean?
And it balances out. You still have we all have obligations because for me, I look at back in the day when I think back, my parents worked a lot, man. And it's not because they were like, we don't want to be around
No.
myself and my sister, but it was like, we have responsibilities, we have bills, you guys want things, we want to provide. So they have to work. And I understood that. Like, I understood, hey, dad, can you come to this? Nope. Mom, can you? Nope. And it was like, it sucked seeing other kids with their parents there. It sucked back then, but I look at it now and it's like, it was a sacrifice. It's not because they didn't want to, but their responsibility. So I love that, you're like, hey, I'm still going to do this. I limit myself because we still have commitments. Things are expensive. We have to pay for things if we want a house, a roof over our heads. So I totally get it, man. I really do. And me and my wife, we're only going to have one because God bless anybody out here listening that has two, three, four. Bro, I'll go pick up my daughter at after school daycare because after school she goes to the daycare to watch her just for a little bit longer when my wife's working and stuff. But I usually pick her up early when I'm home. But like I'll roll up and I'll see like a dad loading three or four, and in my head I'm like, how can you afford that? It's
Yeah, I don't know.
crazy. I'm like. Or a buddy of mine be like, hey, we're having another one. And I'm like, I shook my buddy's hand the other day. He told me he was having a boy. I shook his hand. And I said, God bless you. Because ain't no way, bro, we're having another one. No
No.
way. But
No, we're a one and done family ourselves, and
it's, yeah. And, but,
blessings.
I was going down the hole of before I met my now wife, I worked three part-time jobs, or I worked my full-time department and two side hustles, two part-time departments. And eventually I took it down to one full-time, one part-time. And I was at my part-time for 6 years. I loved it. I loved the guys. It was awesome. Anyone listening, I'm talking about Davidson Fire Department. It was a department outside the county I worked, and so I got to hear different perspectives, how things were done in the city of Charlotte, things like that. And then, my wife had a conversation. She's like, hey, like we just had our daughter. And she's like, she was almost one. And she was like, hey, I need some help. Like by the time I get home, I could maybe see her for 5 minutes because newborns, they sleep a lot. And she's like, we made it to a point financially. She's like, where you can give it up. I didn't really want to because it was such a good place to work. But at the end, I can't neglect what's important and be like, well, like figure it out or we'll figure it. Like, no, you got to do what you got to do. So I totally understand you.
Yeah, no. And I mean, we talk a lot about, the oath we took as it relates to the fire service, but, I would challenge us, what about the oath you took in your marriage?
Right.
Right? Nobody forced you to become a parent, right? And that's the most important oath to me, right? And I get heated when I hear about, firemen coming home and I told my wife I need to take a nap, and like when I walk through that door, like I'm dad mode. Like, we talk so much about being mentally tough and doing hard things. And I'm like, why does that end when you come home? Like, it's time to step up when you get home and do hard things at home,
Right.
right? Be that parent that you want to be. Be that husband or wife that you want to be, right? If you really are tough, then prove it on the home front, because that's
Right.
the most important place. Because as much as I love the job, it's gonna go away someday, and what am I gonna have left when it's gone? I want to have a happy family.
Definitely, man. Definitely. What's a typical shift or call volume for your apparatus, your station?
So the engine, it's a double house. So
Okay.
engine one is our busiest engine in the department, and they're running right around 5,000 calls a year. And then on the truck, we've been in the low threes the last couple of years. So I don't know. I mean, it feels busy, but I think everybody feels busy. There's just different ways that happens. But
Right. But like
yeah,
normally
normally,
after
yeah.
after midnight, what do you guys run it? Three or four?
Yeah, I'd say that, the engine, God bless them, like they're running six or seven, and we might run two to four. We are blessed. We do get some good nights on the ladder too, but when the ladder does go to work, you're working, and those calls can last a little bit longer. We're a downtown station, so a lot of those medical aid calls are pretty quick turn and burn type of
Okay.
calls.
Okay.
But yeah, I would say, on the truck, generally we're running 6 to 10 calls a day. And of course, there's outliers. Like, we have run 20 calls in a day. We have run 15 calls in a day.
Right.
So it, yeah, it's balancing, the call volume and making time for training, making time to work out,
Right.
eating meals together, still having that family time together. So it feels like a good busy place to be. And our department as a whole, all the engines are pretty busy,
Gotcha. Gotcha.
especially south side and east side.
And at a two-piece house, are you guys rotating calls or no? Like as far as like if medical's come out, if
Sure.
the engine's
Yeah.
out.
If the engine's out, then we're next up for
Gotcha.
all in our district.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. And 48s.
So we're very blessed. We work 24 on, 48 off, 24 on, 96 off, and then we have 9 debit days a year, which are just extra days that you can schedule on your 2 day or your 4 day to kind of bring the hours up to what the contract agreement is or whatever.
Okay.
So it's a 4 platoon system.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. With that being said, my last question, I always like to ask the guests, where would you like to see yourself, whether rank wise or just career wise, before you decide to hang it up?
Sure. It's tough to say, right? I definitely had thoughts of promoting, and I have we call it working up,
Okay.
where you ride in the officer's seat. And I feel like a lot of people, when they talk about promoting, they talk about it in terms of having more influence, right? And I've been very blessed in my organization to, get to exert some influence from the firefighter position. So I got to put together a forcible entry program for our recruit academy that I teach. I've been delivering a search lecture to our entire department. So I feel like I'm honoring the seat, you know what I mean? Because to me, if I'm not going to promote, which I currently don't have any plans to, I truly do love being the driver on Ladder One, and I feel like I can provide a lot of value from there. But if I'm going to stay in that seat, I need to honor it, right? I'm not just
Right.
dropping anchor and not doing anything. So I do feel like I'm contributing to the department. I've been a part of planning our first truck academy and delivering that. So I try to be as involved as I can in the training aspect of things, and you know, kind of pushing my agenda in terms of training and search culture and truck culture. And so I think, you know, before I hang it up, you know, I currently see myself as hopefully becoming a senior man on the ladder. I love that station. I love the people that work there. I love the tiller. So hopefully staying there, but continuing to be involved with the recruit academy, because that keeps me connected to the new people that are coming in. Because you know, I'm not necessarily out there in Gen Pop roping around anymore, so got to
Right.
find a way to stay relevant. And you know, a big part of why I do it is to hopefully, you know, pass on my love of the job to people, and let them know what that can look like, and try and, you know, model that for people, you know, what I would want as a firefighter, and let them know, you know, it's okay to love the job, and it's okay to be into the job, and that's what I want for you. And so yeah, I think, you know, just continuing to exert influence from my position, and support my officers, and bring up, you know, the newer people, and contribute in that way. That's where I see myself.
Love it. It's your answer, so I have no,
Thank
there's no rebuttal there. It's perfect because it's your answer. I will say before we part out too, I don't want you to have to answer this next portion, but at least I know what's going on in Tacoma. I know we kind of briefly touched on it. I don't need you to say anything about it. I just want to say, just keep strong. I don't want to say everything happens for a reason, but like there's going to be challenges, ups and downs in life, whether it's fair or not. That's just what life is. That's what life's all about. It's not easy. That's what I teach my daughter. It's not going to be an easy road for you. Okay. You're going to have to go through some things, but I will say that I think how the saying goes, tough times don't last, but tough people do. Everything will work out the way it's supposed to work out. And just know that you have a huge support system out there that's supporting Tacoma and everything that's going on. So I just want to say, man, just keep your head up. I don't think I have to say that to you because I think you have that mindset about you that you're gonna not worry about those things. You're gonna worry about controlling what you can control and just to keep moving forward, man. But at some point, I think with certain groups and cadres that are out there, these politicians that are making these decisions, they're being held accountable and they're being exposed. So I just want to say for you to keep fighting the good fight. And it's just another thing to, at least for me, it's whenever you think you have it bad at your department, go around and talk to other people, okay? Because what you guys are going through, my organization, I don't think, I'm not saying like it'll never happen, but there we have people in good spots that prepare for things like that. So I just wanted to say that.
Thank you so much, Danny. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate the support from everyone out there, you know, that's, you know, shared information about it. And I think I can speak for everybody when I say that, you know, we do feel that support and that love from the fire service. And you know, Tacoma's known as Grit City, right? And we take pride in being gritty, and you know, we're gonna keep doing what we've always done, which is doing more with less, because that's who we are, and we love this job, and I'm blessed to work with amazing people, and no matter what storms, you know, may come, we're gonna make it through it and keep doing what's right on our end.
Awesome. Awesome, pal. Well, John, seriously, I thank you. Shout out to Griffin Spainhauer for making this happen. I always like to give up the shout outs to people that hooked me up, that put me in contact with you. Griffin, thank you for getting this done. Thank you for sharing John's information. John, thank you for coming on and accepting the invite. Truly appreciate it. Love talking shop. Love hearing what the West Coast is doing. So yeah, man, I just want to say thanks for taking time out of your day to do a little podcast interview.
Oh, absolutely. Shout out to Griffin for sure. And thank you so much for the opportunity. Truly was, the honor's all mine. And I really appreciate getting to talk with you, Danny.
Definitely, man. Definitely. Appreciate you, pal.
All right.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.